It's that time of the year, everybody. If you have kids, your kids are likely in school by now. I've got three kids. They just turned 3, 5, and 7. And so the colds are starting to go around the office, things like that. So it's got me really reinvigorated and thinking about health and fitness and things like that. So I'm going to be walking through my journey, because even though this podcast you're going to be listening to today has nothing to do with what I'm saying here, but look out for future episodes of the Carrot Cast on me going through my journey along with some of our team members on getting healthier. You know, if you look at me, you probably think I'm a healthy person, but I'm not. You know, I'm not in shape. I haven't been being physically active. I'm probably shaving years off my life in exchange for doing stuff now that doesn't really last, okay? So I'm going to be going through my journey. If you are in a similar spot in your life where you know you need to be taking care of yourself better, listen to some future episodes of the Carrot Cast. Now, this version of the Carrot Cast, this episode, I have a special guest with you, Josh Shanley. And Josh, I've known for years in different businesses that he's owned. And he's, first of all, he's one of the best dudes around. You know, he's just ethical. He's honest. He knows what he's doing. He's a big, big, big sharer. But I wanted to bring him on because Facebook marketing has become a topic, of course, over the past year, year and a half, that keeps on coming up more and more from our clients. We did a great podcast with Kylie Newbold. I feel the number one Facebook marketing expert for real estate investors specifically. Go check out that episode in the Carrot Cast archive. Just go to carrotcast.com or go find it on iTunes with Kylie Newbold. It has Facebook somewhere in the title of the podcast. Listen to that one first. And then if you're an agent and or investor, this podcast can be perfect for you to help you dial in your Facebook strategy. Josh walks through every single step on how to dial in your targeting, your ads, your landing page, all that kind of stuff. And if you want to learn more about Josh or more from him, then you just go check out his website, clientalchemist.com. But I'm excited to welcome Josh to the podcast and to welcome you guys to his world as well, because he's an amazing dude, and I think you're just going to love him. All right, let's go welcome Josh into the Carrot Cast. Hey guys and gals, Trevor here with Carrot, and I've got a guest that I've known Josh for several years, and I've always really, really looked up to not just the work that he does, but just the man that he is. I know we've had some really, really great conversations over the years. I'm like, man, I really want to dig in on some Facebook topics again on the Carrot Cast, because we did one, probably episode 20-something with our friend Kylie Newbold, who works with a lot of real estate investors. And we're starting to work with a lot more real estate agents now. And that's what Josh specializes in with his company, Client Alchemist, and everything else he does. So I'm like, we're getting Josh on this podcast because he's got a lot of great stuff to talk about on the Facebook side. But just in general, he's a great entrepreneur that I think we can dig into some things and unpack what makes him tick as an entrepreneur. So Josh Shanley, welcome to the podcast, man.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, man. Excited to be here. Good stuff.
Yeah. So for those people who are watching the video version of this on YouTube, there's a whiteboard behind you that has some fancy stick man drawings that we're going to probably be diving into a little bit, showing some Facebook funnel stuff. If you're listening to this on iTunes, sweet. Make sure you're subscribed on iTunes, because you get first access to all of these by about 2 weeks versus YouTube or our blog. But head over to YouTube or to go to carrotcast.com and you'll be able to see the video version of this if there's any fancy video stuff, or you can see Josh's handsome face in there too. So check out both versions and we'll go from there. But dude, before we dive into the Facebook stuff, man, one thing that I love and all the Carrot Cast listeners know, I actually had a call with a client right before this, named Richard Morales, Ricardo Morales, out of the LA area. And man, I just love digging into what makes people tick. And we talked about mindset stuff a lot. And I'm going to dig in a little bit of that stuff with you, kind of what makes you tick, what your story is, and then we'll dig into the Facebook stuff. But I'll let people know who you are first, kind of where you live and what's your family situation like, and what do you do?
Yeah, so central Pennsylvania, just outside of the capital of Pennsylvania, Harrisburg, and happily married for just recently 14 years.
Congrats.
Have 4 kids, 11, 8, 6, and 4. So they certainly keep us busy. And you know, the businesses that I built over the years and the kind of lifestyle that I've created was always driven by wanting to have flexibility and time to spend with them. In fact, you know, this morning my youngest daughter wasn't feeling so great, and so my 4-year-old and my 6-year-old are daughters, and my 8 and 11 are boys, and they have gymnastics in the morning on Thursday mornings, and so my wife was able to take my 6-year-old while I stayed home with my 4-year-old who wasn't feeling well, and you know, those kinds of things are the reason why I've, you know, that became interested in becoming an entrepreneur and have evolved into, you know, this is my second iteration of this type of business. I got started. The book that sort of changed my thinking entirely was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And so my entrepreneurial, you know, and investing journey started with real estate investing, but sort of evolved over time and realized that what I really am most passionate about is A, teaching. I went to college to be a teacher, and specifically teaching marketing, because that's I heard you, I was listening to one, your 5 non-negotiables podcast to prepare for our call. And one of the things that you said was doing things that fill you up, right? That don't drain you, but that fill you up. Well, marketing, that fills me up. Like, sweet. That is, man, that is my game. That's what I love to do and dig into and figure out, for, you know, for agents. I've done it as an investor for investors, and even in other small businesses, dentists, chiropractors, etc. That's that, growing those kinds of business, figuring out, you know, what are the offers? What are the things that we can present, and who's the audience we can present them to get them to raise their hand and do that. So that, that's what, drives me. My current company, is a Client Alchemist. I have a, myself and a partner in that, Jeff Logue. We started that company, in 2015. So about 2 years old at this point.
Cool.
Having a blast, loving life. Wouldn't be doing anything different if I could.
Dude, I want to kind of unpack a couple things that you talked about there. So you talked about the flexibility, and I think that's one thing that pretty much every entrepreneur, you know, maybe not everyone, you know, Elon Musk is a really good example. I don't think he became an entrepreneur so he get flexibility, right?
He became
an entrepreneur so he can just make.
He's unique.
Exactly.
And
there's probably more people like him for sure, but I think the majority of people become an entrepreneur because of they want that increased lifestyle, increased flexibility. And what I've seen happen so much, including myself, and I talked about it on that episode of the podcast that you listened to, the 5 non-negotiables, where my business actually trapped me. It didn't add flexibility. And I think a lot of us, man, we get so deep into building this business that we think, well, I'm going to do this and build this business this way for these 2 years or 5 years or 10 years or whatever. And then I will pull back and enjoy more time with my kids or my family or my friends. Is that something that, like, when you start your businesses, do you have that grind phase where you sacrifice the flexibility in life, or do you always intentionally build in that flexibility in life and then make sure your business supports that?
Well, I mean, I would say that this company in particular, I had built up assets that I could immediately leverage for.
Yep.
I think there is in any business a period of time where it, where I call like escape velocity, where like you have to build enough momentum, tipping point, whatever, you know, phrase or term you want to use. But I think so I went through those phases several times, but I think now it's easier than ever in some respects to create leverage and use systems and funnels and so forth, so that even in that phase, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're personally grinding 18 or 20 hours a day.
Yep.
It may still be a grind in some form or fashion, you know, whether it be, you know, you're not at the income level that you want or the revenue level that you want, et cetera. But I don't know that that necessarily means that, you know, you're staying up all night and you're, you know, you're traveling all over the world to make it happen.
Yep.
Certainly that may be a way to pour gasoline on the fire. But you know, I just think that you can do things smarter. You can create and build and leverage assets in a way that, you know, can still keep that time flexibility for yourself. as you are building and growing and sort of working towards whatever your goals are.
No, totally. On the marketing side, so you mentioned how you love marketing and it's one of those things that fills you up and you just are passionate about. And I'm really similar, right? I love marketing, but I love the strategy side of it. It really drags me down to do any implementation of marketing unless I'm sitting there writing a quick thing of copy or, you know, getting the basics of a page lined out, have the team go do it. And then I finish the last 10%. And dude, you know better than you know most of us how important marketing is just as an entrepreneur or in life, because you've started multiple businesses. You wouldn't have been able to do it unless you were a great marketer. And I've heard many people say, and I 100% agree with it, that one of the big differences between entrepreneurs who become successful and those who don't are the ones who get passionate about the marketing of that business. Because you can be great at the craft of building your widget, but if you can't market it and get insanely excited about the learning the craft of marketing, that's where people fall down, or hire someone who has that passion. So as you're going through in your marketing journey, dude, can you pull any resources out of your head that like, man, these things were amazing resources as I was learning how to be a marketer?
Well, the first thing I want to do is unpack what you said a little bit, because that is one of like the core messages that we are consistently trying to communicate to our community, is that this skill is more important than you being able to, you know, to take care of the client, to you know, to work up the contracts, et cetera, because this skill drives that opportunity to have the ability to serve them. And you know, I came into the real estate and the real estate agent space different than a lot get into. I mean, most get into it because they like houses, or maybe they had a bad experience with a real estate agent, things like that. I came in from a marketing perspective, and so my viewpoint on that is much different. As far as like, I wouldn't say any one a resource per se that drove or you know was like that I could say, you know, go do, you know, X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
But I've been following great online marketers for, I don't know, 10 or 12 years now. It's hard to even fathom that it's been that long, but guys like Ryan Dice and Perry Belcher and Frank Kern and Dean Jackson, just really sort of you know, sort of legendary internet online type marketers, and digging into their programs and really as much as anything, watching what they do and then trying to reverse engineer what they're doing. And I try to sort of fill in some of those holes that maybe, I'm missing.
Yep. Dude, it's so funny. I was talking with someone recently. Actually, yesterday I was in our offices, and a good friend of mine and mentor, Seth, he's been on the podcast before. Highly successful dude. You know, his last company did about $60 million in revenue a year, and he just sold it. And he walks and he's like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Man, I'm looking at Facebook ads." And that's one thing that I just catch myself all the time. Anywhere I'm at, whether I'm on Facebook or I'm driving down the street or I'm reading a magazine, my eyes always key in on the marketing behind that.
Yep.
And do you find yourself always screenshotting good Facebook ads and stuff?
Oh man, I have so many screenshots on here of Facebook ads, and there's times too. I've stopped verbalizing it, but you know, I'm driving with my wife and I'll see a billboard or something and I just think like, man, if they would just do this, or if they did this, then always thinking like, what could they do better with that? Or how, or why is that, like for Facebook, you know, if I see one that has tons of engagement and shares and so forth, I'm trying to reverse engineer like, why is that?
Yep.
You know, what is the message here that's really tapping into that emotion or whatever that's causing those reactions and engagements and so forth. So yeah, we're kindred spirits when it comes to that, for sure.
I love it, man. So we're going to shift over to Facebook marketing here in a bit, but before we do, I want everyone who's listening to this or watching it to write this down, take a mental note, whatever it is. that one of the best ways, like Josh said, to learn marketing and to become a great marketer that's free is to notice what catches you, just like Josh mentioned. So take mental note of it, write it down. And then as you're flipping through Facebook, as you're driving down the street, looking in the newspaper, people so read those magazines, whatever, take note of the things that grab your attention. And I'll find myself all the time in airline magazines, dude. I'm ripping pages out because I'm going, man, I've seen this ad in here like 5 years or in a row or 10 years, and it's always the same ad. It must be working. Otherwise, that, I don't know if you guys remember, there's several ads in airplane magazines that I have my swipe file here in the office. One of them is something around tremors that people have with their hands. And it's this great ad. It's this little square, and it basically shows the before and the after of, I can't remember what type of disease it is or whatever, but some sort of tremors in your hands. And it shows a person drawing a circle with a pencil and what it looks like before they had this treatment and then what it looks like after. And I'm going, oh my gosh, it's so amazing how they nailed that ad. And you know, they had a lot of iterations on it. So I've got that one ripped out, and we try to come up with examples that we can leverage that in our business.
That's an incredible demonstration of what, I mean, like, when you can demonstrate the result that you can get in a simple, you know, that you can just very quickly see that and get the point, you know, and have it like that visceral reaction. If you're somebody struggling with that issue, that's great stuff.
No, it was good stuff, man. So yeah, guys and gals, make sure to look for good marketing, pull them out, make what marketers call swipe files. So anytime you're looking to make your ads or do this or do that, you go toward that swipe file, take it out so you can get inspired by the things that grabbed you. So now let's move over to Facebook marketing, man. And I know that's your specialty. People can find information about what you do at clientalchemist.com. Or find you on Facebook over there. And I think it's one of us having a little bit of a difficulty with our Wi-Fi. It might be on our end. Someone might be uploading something. But for those who are listening, if there's a little bit of blips here and there, just stay with us. But, dude, on the Facebook side of things, so what do you guys do for real estate agents? Do you guys work with investors too? But what do you specialize in, and what is your philosophy around Facebook marketing?
So, we want to leverage Facebook to build assets, audiences that we can then that allow us to create more leverage and thereby create more freedom. That get people chasing us, so we don't have to chase after them. Right. Mm-hmm. So we're not for the agents, so they don't have to cold call or door knock or basically beg for business. Right. So we're leveraging media to build audiences, to get to attract them to us. And I've even written a book that was published almost a year ago now, and we have four sort of core steps that we sort of take people through, our members and people that read the book, that will sort of walk through that process. And the steps are pretty simple and straightforward. Number one, you have to identify who is your target audience. Who do you want to work with, right? And as an agent and as a real estate investor, typically that's pretty clear. Like, I want to work with people in this geographic area. Mm-hmm. Might be a zip code, might be a set of zip codes, might be a town, a city, a county, whatever. But you have a geographic area that you want to work within. Mm-hmm. And then within that geographic area, you might narrow it down by any number of ways or for any number of reasons. For agents, they may want to work with baby boomers in a particular zip code, or they only want to work with homeowners who are young parents who might be looking to move up, right? Mm-hmm. They might be looking to trade up into a bigger home because they're running out of space. They might be looking to work with first-time home buyers, right? So people who are currently renting or, looking to become a first-time home buyer, ready to buy their first home. So the first thing is just getting really clear on who that is, right? Yeah. And that's a mistake that I see often is our agents try to go too broad. They live in a city of 4 million people, and they want to try and get all of those people as clients. And the reality is, if you just sliver off a little bit, of that 4 million to, let's say, a target audience of 40,000 or even half of that, 20,000, and you get really good at the next three steps, that's really all you need to do, right? You don't have to cast this super, super wide net. If you can, you know, we have a little phrase that if you try to go broad or brand, you go broke. Mm-hmm. And if you can go narrow or niche, you get rich. And rich doesn't necessarily have to just mean monetarily. It just means that, you know, you can be rich in being fulfilled in that the fact that you're working with the people that you want to work with, right? Yeah. The segment of the audience of your market that really excites you, right? You know, there are lots of agents that love working with first-time homebuyers. Mm-hmm. And there's tons of agents that would never want to work with first-time homebuyers, right? So you can create that experience. You can go out and be intentional about attracting those people, those perfect right clients for you. Mm-hmm. Identify is number one. Number two is attract. What are we going to do to attract the audience that we've identified to then number three, connect with them. Mm. And in the book, there's a whole hierarchy of connection. With Facebook, you want to have a business page as your sort of your hub. Mm. That you run all your ads through. And the very low level of connection there is just people engaging with the page, becoming fans or engaging with posts. But then we work them up that hierarchy through getting people to opt in for more information, maybe a report of some kind, okay. Getting them to call or text to the point where at the very top, we call them advocates. So because you create a process of doing business with you that is pleasurable and a good experience, they're going to be more likely to become an advocate and refer you business versus, and this is something that when people get this, it makes a big difference. If your primary means of business is chasing, right? Is you seeking out business, cold calling, door knocking and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The likelihood that person, that client that you got in that way is to refer you more business is lower because either consciously or subconsciously, they're going to be thinking, am I subjecting my, my circle of influence to this same type of behavior, this same type of chasing?
Gotcha.
Gary Vaynerchuk has a great quote. I don't even remember. It was probably from, you know, he's got so much content out there. But I've heard him say several times is how you make a sale is as important as actually making the sale. And for us, we say how you acquire a client is as important as actually acquiring the client. So when we reverse engineer this process and we make it, we create a process where they're chasing after us and the experience is more pleasurable in that fashion, they are going to be much more likely to refer more business.
Yeah.
And, the fourth part of our four-part process, we call it converse. And we specifically use the word converse versus convert because to me, convert is like this. First of all, it connotes like an event, like, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to do something that converts this person to my way of thinking. But what we try to get our community to think and the way I've tried to always do things, just because it's just my personality. I'm not I don't like to make hard sales and I don't want to be a closer per se. Is if we can get into conversations, if we can get people conversing with us, naturally, if we are trying to be a servant, right? If we are trying to serve them, there's going to come a natural part of the conversation where they are going to become a client.
Yep.
And maybe they won't, but they probably weren't going to anyway, right? And mm-hmm. so another thing, that the mantra that we have is when you focus on conversions, really what you're doing is focusing on sales. Yep. And in reality, most of America, most consumers don't really like salespeople. It's just the reality. Mm-hmm. But if you focus on conversations, you will be perceived and received more as a servant. And I don't know, not everybody would say this, but for me, that's what I want to be perceived by my clients and the people that I work with is a servant. Yes, mm-hmm. I am selling something, but I'm selling it with a servant's heart versus a hard sale sort of approach or mentality.
Man, I was at a mastermind shoot 3-4 months ago. Really high, I mean, the highest level flippers and wholesalers in the country, and amazing mastermind. And I was standing up in front of the room, and I mentioned this on a past episode of the Carrot Cast. And we got to talking about just business and the quality of clients you get, and just how much are you enjoying your business. And I asked everyone, I said, you know, raise the hands. Who in here would love to have a beer with your average client? And there were 30 people in that room that I was in. Two of us raised our hands, me and one other person. And what you're talking about there, dude, this is one of the byproducts of it, is we can all day long go after transactions in our business and cashing that next check, which increases our income. But I've experienced this, and I think a lot of people have as well, is at a certain point, when your back isn't against the wall anymore, income wise, you start to look at it and go, man, am I having fun in my business? Am I working with people I really want to work with? Is it enriching me? Am I enriching them? And that's where, the conversations, you know, versus conversions, thing, that equation really kicks in. I mean, you're building relationships with people because you actually give a damn about them. You actually care about them, and you actually are an expert that can really help them. And rather than cramming messages down their throat, asking for the sale, you're finding out what pain points they have and delivering them value first and then engaging. So, dude,
and clearly you guys are doing an incredible job of that, that Carrot, because you keep growing.
Yep.
Right. When you're transactional, it's really hard to grow because it's a grind. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to just keep grinding. But if you take care of people, if you serve people, if you put their interests first, if you're working with people that, like you said, you know, you'd be happy to have a beer with, they're going to naturally become advocates of you. Mm-hmm. And it may not, your business and a referral opportunity may not come up this week or this month or even this year. But at some point it will, and that is, you know, that is free business for you or whoever listening, if you built in that, with that mentality, that would not have, you know, been an opportunity if you've got this conversion sort of mentality, this transactional type of mentality.
Man, so there's, and we could talk all day long about marketing for real estate agents, things like that, and I want to dig into, you know, the rest of the steps in the book. Maybe we already touched on step 4. I can't remember, but you'll hear a lot right now that cold calling is working great again, right? Like, we hear that in the investor circle big time, where these certain lists for direct mail were crushing it 2 years ago. They're not now. And then now, like, the new wave is all of a sudden the old wave, which was picking up, you know, getting lists and calling 2,000 people a week. And then these people are closing a lot of deals. So that's sweet. They're really scaling their businesses up. So we can do business that way. But like you're mentioning, there's the other way, which is building those relationships. And I think one thing that pops in people's minds is they go, well, how long is it really going to take me to build a business that is based off of the way that we're talking about here, Josh, versus me doing all this other stuff that seems like it's a more immediate return. Have you found anything, or what's your philosophy on that? We can all day find quick, immediate returns on stuff versus building something long-term.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have sort of 6 different types of campaigns that mm-hmm. or categories of campaigns that our members sort of leverage and utilize time and again. And 2 of the 6 are for more immediate potential business.
Cool.
And so, implemented correctly, they could potentially yield the same amount of results in a day or a week's time as 20 dials or 50 dials or 100 dials. So mm-hmm. you can still get that same end result, you know, that is that immediate gratification.
Yep.
But the reason why it's only one, or it's only 2 of our 6 categories, is we want to get people quick wins while helping them build sustainable assets, right? Yep. And that's our mentality. The other thing I would say, though, too, is, listen, just because I hate cold calling and I don't want to be cold called doesn't mean that it isn't a means of doing business, and doesn't mean that it doesn't work. It's just that I would never build a business that was built on a foundation of that, that way of doing things. But look, the reality is we are all unique. Our personalities are all different. And some people I think it's a very small percentage, but actually like to do that.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
They actually like to cold call. Again, I would rather be tortured in some way than do that, but to each their own, right? And so, you know, you got to do what makes sense and works for you and build the business the way you want it to look like and the foundation that you want it to be built on.
And, it's so important. So same thing. I want everyone to write this down or take a mental note on it where Josh mentioned as a part of your marketing campaigns, you've got quick wins, you've got foundation, your long-term momentum building stuff. And we teach the same thing at Carrot, you know, where we always say, hey, get your leads and traffic now. And then here's your momentum long-term builders. For us, the way that we teach, of course, it's all the online paid stuff. It's get your paid traffic now with Facebook or Google Pay-Per-Click or Bing or whatever. If you're using direct mail, sweet, get that stuff now. That's stuff that you can get an immediate return on. And then for us, it's the content marketing, SEO, things like that over the long term that take a while. I mean, you're not going to get these immediate quick returns, but man, when you build them and you're intentional and week after week, you're focusing on it, you start to get this massive momentum, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 18 months out. And then you look back and go, man, I'm so glad I made that decision to focus on relationship content and value versus still being in the hamster wheel of having to go transactional in a big way. So before people forget, the book that Josh is talking about that they wrote, it's called Attract You, 4 Simple Steps to Engaging Your Ideal Client with Zero Prospect. And you guys can actually get a free copy of that book. Go to clientalchemist.com, ALCHEMIST, clientalchemist.com, and you can get a free copy of it right there. So that way you can kind of follow along and dig deeper into what Josh is talking about. And they've got amazing stuff. I can completely vouch for the quality and just what they do over there. Did we touch on step 4? I can't remember.
Yeah. So identify, attract, connect, and converse.
Sweet.
Identify, attract, connect, and converse. And that's the process that we are helping people in different ways, right? Because, you know, what we use to attract someone and connect with them is going to be different based upon who you've identified as your ideal client, right? So that's something that continually, you know, sort of evolves and is dependent upon the individual individual, you know, what they want, who their ideal client is.
Man, so I want to, if you're cool with it, let's do this. These are things going through my mind, and I just know our listeners are going, okay, how do we identify, you know, how do we attract and things like that? So maybe we'll pick out one or two quick tips from each one of those 4.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So on the identify side of things, you mentioned first-time homebuyers as an example, and someone's going into Facebook, and we're gonna talk about Facebook specifically with this, guys and gals. So we're going to go into Facebook. And you go into your Facebook ads manager. We're not going to talk about how to go into that right now. You can find all kinds of information on Josh's website, clientalchemist.com. They've got all kinds of training. We've got training on that topic, so we're not going to dig into that. There's all kinds of stuff. We have free blog posts to show you how to set up a lot of this stuff. So on the targeting, so you mentioned, let's use this as an example. I'm in a small area. It's about 30,000 people in our town of Roseburg. We have a county that's, I don't know, I'm making this crap up, but 80,000 people, let's say. It's a decently big county. We have probably 5 or 6 different cities that a real estate agent that are around Roseburg would likely also deal in that are within 30 minutes drive. If I'm in a city like that size, what would you have an agent start with? Like, is that small enough to where I go, man, just cast a wide blanket for everyone? Do we have to niche down further?
So yeah, in a small area, the decision is, am I going to focus on, is my niche, quote unquote, simply going to be Roseburg? Mm-hmm. Because in an example like that, that's a relatively small audience, 30,000 people. Like, what we recommend when people are going through the identify process is an audience on the very low end, like 10,000, and on the higher end, 50,000, and in some extreme cases, maybe 100,000. Mm-hmm. So not obviously not all 30,000 residents are even, you know, part of the potential audience, because you have kids in there and people in there. But that alone is a good size audience. So you're in an example where that may be it. Like, your identify is simply the geographic indicator. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that, if you are just, you know, you just have a passion for, say, first-time homebuyers or working with baby boomers, mm-hmm. whatever, you may be okay with casting your net wider geographically and narrowing down inside of that geography. So maybe you do cast your net for the whole county. And the way you're going to narrow down is that your whole county, but you're going to focus on baby boomers, or you're going to focus on first time home buyers, or you're going to focus on those parents that already own a home that are ready for move up, whatever the case may be. And there, I can't, you know, this is the part of the process that we can offer suggestions, and we can offer things to think about, right? Questions to think through. Yep. But ultimately, it's something that each individual person has to sit down and really think about. And decide for themselves, you know, what do I want? Do I want to, you know, have a little bit more travel involved, but really work with those clients that I just have a love for? Or is my passion for Roseburg, yeah, right? Am I just really passionate about our town? And that passion will come through in, you know, all clients, from first time home buyers to baby boomers, whatever. Mm-hmm. And also, like, that answer today, you know, it can evolve. Like, you may in a year or two, you may decide that, you know, I know I initially was, you know, focusing on Roseburg, but I've found over the years that I really like working with this, you know, sort of clientele. Well, you can always adapt and change and so forth. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to take some time, you know, to think about for now, and then always know that it's a work in progress. Everything is a work in progress, really.
Dude, so what are some ways? So you mentioned first-time home buyers, baby boomers, people who are moving up. How would we further niche that down? Is it by age? I mean, you can probably guess that a first-time home buyer versus obviously a baby boomer are going to be in different age brackets, but are there other factors that you guys have found indicate that those, you know, people that might land in those buckets?
Yeah, I mean, geography, age, and then, you know, interest, their specific interests on Facebook. So if first-time home buyers is what I'm looking at, I may choose, you know, ages 25 to 33 or maybe 24 to 33, whatever, mm-hmm, who are first-time home buyers. That's an interest category, and also renters, mm-hmm, right? So you're piling all those in. Now, the first-time home buyers are going to have more intent than the renters, mm-hmm, potentially, or at least according to Facebook anyway.
Yeah.
But you know, when we're connecting, we want to build a pipeline, right? Because, you know, some people are ready and motivated now or soon, and the vast majority are, you know, are going to be 6, 9, 12, 18 months out. I mean, you know, we have instances for our clients all the time. I'm sure you guys do. I had it personally where I had been communicating via email and different methods for 12, 18, 24, 36 months. I think the longest one I tracked was I had someone who had opted in for a free report about selling their home. And like 37 months later is when, you know, we actually did business. And so, you know, it's okay in that case where they may not have the intent of wanting to buy a home today or even this month, but they have that in the back of their mind to start connecting and building that rapport and relationship with them. Because when you do it right, then when they are serious, when their motivation does change, they've already decided. Even if they've never talked with you, even if they've never replied to an email, replied to a text, talked to you on the phone or anything, that's the other thing that happens is, like, you know, you'll get an email, a call or text, and it's already a foregone conclusion. They've already decided that, and you don't even know who that person is.
Yep.
They feel like they know you. And so you don't have to sell them at that point. You just get to serve them.
Yep.
So anyway, that was a long answer, but yes, geographic, age, and then interest basically is layering.
And I'm thinking through right now. So there's a lot of different things on the interest side. If you look at baby boomers as an example, if that's your focus, I mean, there's magazines that they might be reading. There's, AARP or whatever it's called, AARP. There's, you know, all kinds of things like that they might be reading, conversing, and liking. Yeah. And same thing with the person who's moving up. So one quick question that is probably going through people's mind is, so you mentioned the interest of a first-time home buyer that Facebook can tell that. Is that something that someone's actually in their Facebook account clicking something saying I'm a first-time home buyer, or is Facebook getting that data from elsewhere?
They must be getting the data from elsewhere.
Yep.
And I don't know, you know, what is, you know, creating that little click, which is why I like to layer on the renters as well, because, you know, their data is great, but it's also not perfect, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that, you know, it's kind of like, you know, Goldilocks. We don't want it too hot or too cold, right? And so this part of the process, when you're getting very specific and building that audience in Facebook, you want to make sure that, like, you're not going too big, right? You want to make sure that you're appropriately narrowing, but you also don't want to get too narrow,
yep.
right? Because if you narrow it down to an audience of, you know, a couple hundred or a couple thousand people, it's going to be hard to create some sustainable results. You can probably still get some results, but over the long haul, you know, you're going to run out of opportunities to connect and converse with folks.
Yep. Dude, I love it. So get your interest levels nailed down, and then we're going to go to attract. So if we're going to attract, obviously we got to turn some ads on. So what happens there, and kind of what ads are you guys finding? What types of ads are you guys finding are working well right now for Facebook? And also, what kind of budget should people kind of block out? Is it a $5 per day kind of thing? Or are you finding, hey, it's not even worth it doing under this? You got to have a budget of at least X. Kind of what's working there on the attract side?
So first of all, the thing to think about with what you're creating, like what you're offering to attract is you have to think like congruently, like if I am this person, what would I be attracted to? So if I'm a first time home buyer and I see a beautiful looking first time home buyer type of home, I'm going to probably stop and pay attention, and I might even want more information. Mm-hmm. So that's what we do for that, like, immediate reaction. We'll find a home that is the perfect, like, first time home buyer kind of home. We'll make sure that we've got a good hook for it, and we make it as easy as possible for the person to raise their hand and say, I'm interested in this property, or I'd like more information on this property. However, to build a pipeline, a future business, what we would do is create a report just like a free list type of offer of homes specific to them. So, you could offer a free weekly list of homes under a certain amount of money, or a free weekly list of XYZ type of homes that would make sense and be suitable for a first-time home buyer. Or on the other side, maybe downsizing, baby boomers downsizing. Maybe you offer a free weekly list of single story homes, right? Because they might be interested in a ranch. Simple things like that. As far as budgets, we see you can still win with minimal budgets. $5 a day, $10 a day. If you're doing that, you've got to make sure that everything is super congruent. Right, that like the images are congruent to the audience, and the copy is congruent to the audience. Everything is congruent as possible, and that there's some element of curiosity in what you're putting in front of them. Right, yep. There's a real reason that they would want this more information. The other thing to keep in mind is if you're in a more competitive market, you're probably going to have you're going to have a higher, you're going to need or require a higher budget to get similar results. Mm-hmm. But in most cases, there is it's all relative, because most of the more competitive markets, the average home price is also a lot higher. And so it sort of all works out in the wash. The reality, it's just that some people, they'll see some of our case studies on our blog. And, you know, they might be more rural areas, and they're in a super competitive market where the average home price is like four times the example of the post. And they're confused why, you know, this person's getting leads for $2 a lead and I'm getting them for 10. The reality is that's great.
Yep.
Right. Because the numbers and the mathematics, it still works out great. It's just that, you know, you just have to be aware of that, right? And just have that perspective.
And we've dug in, everyone listen to this, we've dug in really deep on the math of paid marketing in two really recent podcasts. So if you're going to do any pay-per-click marketing through Google, Bing, or if you're going to do stuff through Facebook, go back and listen to those past episodes. One of them, I think, is the number one PPC metric you should be looking at, which I feel, it's not like the top one, but I feel everyone should know this number, which is your target cost per lead. Because if you know the target cost per lead, the way we work it back, you're always going to win as long as your numbers stay strong. strong. And then we also have a calculator. If you go to oncarrot.com/ROI, we have an ROI calculator for paid marketing. So check those out. We're not going to dig a lot into the math of the paid marketing on this episode because we've done it a lot in some past ones.
One thing I will say though, just, you know, Facebook gives you a lot of data in their ads manager. And, you know, what we tell people is, how much did I spend? How many leads or how many conversations did I have? Yep. If you've got that, that's a good place to start, right? Then you can dig into some of the other stuff. But like, that is the most important. And I love the target cost per lead. If you know out of 100 leads, I'm going to close 8 of them, then you just work it back. Just figure it out. It's just math, right? You know, and you can figure out. So if I get leads for X, I can get a 5x ROI. If I get leads for Y, I can get a 10x ROI. Mm-hmm. And then you just, you know, it's powerful and very helpful information for sure.
It's fun doing the math too, man. Like, because like you said, it's so powerful and it's really empowering too, because you stop using emotion to guide that budget. And totally. So many people do that. I was talking to a guy yesterday. He's like, hey, I really want to get going on pay-per-click. And he's in like a really big market. And he goes, I'm only going to set aside $1,000 to $2,000 a month for Google pay-per-click. And I'm like, well, that sounds sweet, but let's dig into the math and see what you really need. Like what is the math equation that's going to help you succeed? And we did the math and it was like, he would be crushing it at acquiring deals for $3,000 to $5,000 per deal. He'd be crushing it. And you start to look at the numbers and like, if we're only going to allocate $1,000 to $2,000 a month in his particular market with his close ratio and stuff like that and his average profit per deal, he was completely probably not going to succeed. He'd be in month 2 or 3 and he'd be like, I haven't closed the deal yet. I've put in $2,000 or $3,000 or whatever it is. Therefore, this doesn't work, when he could have spent up to $5,000 according to this math. And the math would have been amazing for him because he's pulling in $25,000 to $30,000 net profit per deals. And even more than $5,000 on that first deal, if I'm pulling in $30,000 net average profit per deal, dude, I'd probably be putting $10,000 or $15,000 in myself on the first deal to get my numbers down and to get that win. And then I can start to scale it back and get closer towards the profit margin I'm looking for. That's just good stuff. So on the third part, we talked about attracting now. So launching some ads, you really dialed in amazingly what some of the ad examples could be, which I love. And you guys can go to clientalchemist.com and just, I'm sure they have a lot of other training. I know that you guys have a lot of training that deep dive in this. The next part was converse, right?
Connect.
Right.
So how we connect just depends on the objective, right? We might send them to a landing page where in exchange for information, we give them the thing we offered. We've been using lead ads a lot lately, which makes it even easier to get data. You know, it keeps people on Facebook. You can pre-populate information. So it makes it easier. It makes it easier for the consumer to give the information. And then we have ads where we have right in the ad, hey, call or text this number for more information. And that can't be tracked through Facebook, but you know, you can track it with individual numbers. You can track it with if you've got an IVR. There's lots of ways that you can track that, but those are sort of the different ways. And we also, you know, lower on in the connection, we're trying to build up a fan base. We're trying to get people to engage with posts, and that we talk about in the book is what I call priming the pump, because when you've got an engaged page, all your other campaigns perform better. And there's a number of reasons why. I'm sure it's part of Facebook's algorithm for one, but also if there are 100 fans of, you know, the page that you're running traffic through, that you're running campaigns through, there's social proof there. And if, let's take Roseburg, and you know, you've got a Roseburg focused page, right? A Roseburg focused business page, and you know, you see an ad that your friend, you know, your Roseburg friend already likes that page. Well, it'll say, you know, it'll tell you who of your friends already like the page. Well, there's social proof there. Yep. You know, if Trevor likes it, or you know, if John likes this page already, then it must be okay, it must be safe. And there's that social element in there, and that, you know, the problem with that is, like, in that process, there's no like direct results, but it's so critical to get the direct result that we include that in the process. And we, you know, we have that as the sort of baseline connection and then just working people up the line.
So you guys doing light campaigns for that?
Right. Light campaigns and even different kinds of engagement posts for engagement that then you can invite people that engage to come and like the page. So we might run contests, like free giveaways, $25 gift card to the local coffee shop or whatever, just to get people engaging that you then can invite to like the page. And it just creates momentum and this, just part of the algorithm that will help those other campaigns perform, much better.
Dude, we've got this client here in Roseburg, and as we're going into Agent Carrot pretty heavily here this next, year especially, we've been digging with agents a lot. One of our clients, they're the largest Century 21 team in the Northwest here in Roseburg, and they did a contest like that, dude. They did a contest and some sort of a giveaway. It was simple. It wasn't like thousands of dollars of stuff. It was literally probably under $50 and whatever it was for a restaurant. And it had hundreds of people that commented on it and stuff, and someone won it. So, So what you're saying there is it's not just about getting someone to see, hey, this company is doing a giveaway. Cool. It's also about the engagement and the data that Facebook sees and goes, okay, therefore we're going to start to look at this page in a different way with their ads and everything else.
Yep.
Sweet. Definitely. Interesting. I love it. So connect with people there. And of course, I'm sure you mentioned that one transaction that took whatever it was, 37 months. Are you following up with emails? Kind of what was happening there to nurture that prospect over the time?
Sure. So that's converse, right? Mm-hmm. So email, if we've got other data, we might text, we might call, right? If they've given us that information up front, then we should use the information. We should use the data, even if it's just to make a little connection, right? Mm-hmm. Their motivation might not be high right now, but connect in every way possible. The thing that I think where at least we see a lot of agents drop the ball with is the ongoing follow-up communications in a conversational tone, and in a way that is consistent, mm-hmm. right? So like if you offer a free weekly list of X kinds of homes, right? Well, inherent in that offer is the fact that you're going to send them a weekly list, right? That you're going to send them an updated list every week until they ask you not to, or they say, hey, I'd really like to see this one, or I'd like more information on this one. Mm-hmm. So that naturally is a simple way that you can follow up with them. However, we also build in some every 60 to 90 days re-engagement campaigns. Simple little short emails that are designed to just get them to say, are you still interested in X? Yes or no? And and any answer is fine, right? So, it could be, are you still interested in buying buying your first home in Roseburg? Yep. Hit reply and let me know. And they may say, yes, but we're still 6 to 9 months out. Or they may say, no, I don't think so at this time, or whatever. Any answer is fine. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to have a conversation. Because whatever they, let's say they say, no, I'm not. We're just not interested anymore. You can say, hey, great. Perfect. That way I can take you off. You won't get these emails. And oh, by the way, do you know anybody that might be?
Mm-hmm.
So you can still turn it into an opportunity to maybe, get a referral or something like that, as long as you haven't ruined the opportunity for that through your communications and your conversing leading up to that point, right? And it's a lot easier to lose a transaction in many cases than just to attract that client in the first place, right? You can do lots of things to do irrevocable damage through your communications versus building that rapport and building up that bank of trust and goodwill by simply doing the thing that you promised on the front end anyway, right? By just making good on the thing that you promised up front.
Dude, and on the connect side, man, that's something I think, especially with the social media age where everyone's posting everything that they're doing and people are kind of like sleuthing and seeing what their friends are doing or whatever. That's one thing I think a lot of entrepreneurs and real estate agents and investors really miss is they think everything I've got to post for these people has got to be business. It's got to be just properties or something like that. But everyone, you know, every one of your competitors can also send them that same list of properties. So that's you're asking for this. This is what you're looking for. It's a direct value add. But then the way that, of course, you get them to come over to you is with that personality, with connecting to them, like you said, do you know Ryan Fletcher? I'm sure you know Fletcher, yeah?
Absolutely.
So I've known Fletcher for years, and I think we met first in 2009 or 2010, and he lives over here by me. We got married the same year. We're the same age. Kids are the same age. Like, we just have so much in common. He's a great dude. I had him on the Carrot Cast, probably episode 30 or something like that. And awesome guy. And as you know, since you're a follower of Ryan, if you guys haven't listened to that episode of the Carrot Cast yet, go back, look for...
I'm sure it's killer. I'm going to go listen to it.
It's fun, man. He's really good. But he talks about, I don't remember what he calls it, but it's, you know, the Seinfeld episodes or soap opera kind of stuff where you're just talking about stuff, right? Interesting stuff. It's the stuff behind the scenes. Are you guys seeing success with that with your clients with building connection in that way? And do you have any examples where people are doing it?
Absolutely. So, just telling real simple stories, mm-hmm. right? So, like, you know, instead of just saying, hey, look at me, I'm so great, we just sold this house, tell the story of the person that, if you were the listing agent, tell the story of that person mm-hmm. and how you helped them and why they were selling, obviously with permission of them, or tell the story of the first time home buyer that you just helped buy their home, mm-hmm. right? That, you know, maybe they'd been trying to buy their first home for over 2 years and, you know, just couldn't get financing or couldn't find the right property or whatever. And it doesn't have to be, you know, Fletcher is an incredible storyteller mm-hmm. and a great teacher of that. But they don't have to be super elaborate stories. Yeah. You can tell a story in two or three sentences. You know, which, you know, and everybody listening, you can find it on the site. We have what we call a seller referral offer post. Mm-hmm. And it's simply telling a story about a recent transaction, which can be, we need some help. We just listed and sold the Johnson's house in, you know, on Blank Avenue in Roseburg, in 3 days. And we had multiple offers. Right now we have more qualified buyers than we have homes to sell them. Who do you know that's thinking about selling their home in, you know, blank area? Call or text me. We'd love to try and, you know, put them together or help them out, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So deeper stories are powerful, but it doesn't have to be paragraphs or pages, right? Yep. You can get good at telling little bite-sized stories, and that's the difference of what you said. You know, that's how you can differentiate all of the information and data that available to people interested in real estate.
I love it, man. Well, dude, I appreciate your time, and there's so much more we could talk about. I know a lot of people they probably want to dig in even more. So what I'd suggest everyone do is head over to Josh's website, clientalchemist.com. I grab his book over there for free, and he's got a bunch of great stuff. He's got his other content, blog products, things like that. So if you resonated with Josh, hop over there, learn more from him, and also go find him on Facebook, because that's one of the things he's amazing at. And just follow along, like, see what he's doing and see what his clients are doing and model that. Go out there and model those things for yourself. Josh, any parting words before we go, man?
No, just, again, I appreciate you having me on. I said no, but then I'll give two things. Yeah. Embrace the fact that regardless of what business you're in, the real business you're in is marketing that business or that service. And find one way that you can market and learn and master that and then go to the next one. Don't try to master three at once or even two at once or five at once. Great analogy. Another guy in the sort of real estate space, I heard him share at a mastermind. His name is Carl White, and I promise I'll keep it short, but this is really good.
Very good.
Is if you picture two cliffs, right, and a ravine in between. The way you look at each project, and this could be mastering a marketing medium, is that you've got to build a bridge from one side to the other, where you are to where you want to be, right? The thing that I'm that I don't have and the thing that I want, and build a bridge from one side to the other. The problem, and this is a big problem for most entrepreneurs, is we try and build a bunch of bridges at once, and none of them ever make it to the other side. And so, you know, if you got a halfway built bridge, it's, you know, you're careening off into the ravine, right? You never actually get the result you desired. So build one bridge at a time, build it to completion, and then go to the next project or go to the next, you know, marketing medium or whatever. Anyway,
and basically that bridge is the exact four steps we talked about. I mean, literally. Yeah. So go grab the book. The book is going to help build that bridge from where they are to where they want to go through those four steps. And guys and gals, dig in with Josh. He's going to help you build that bridge and get there. And Josh, I really appreciate your time here, man. I hope we can connect in person sometime soon. And I just really appreciate your time with us, dude.
All right. Thanks, Trevor. Take care.
Thank you.